From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. I'm Nate Russell. Welcome back, listeners, to another episode of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Ali Pankhew is our guest today. Ali's a writer, director from Toronto, also based in Los Angeles, and she took the time while she was here in New York to sit down and talk to us a little bit about her work as a writer and director in two different countries. So really excited to have her here and to talk about her process as a writer and a director and her perspective as someone who is an immigrant as well as a creative and somebody who's working in two different cities. And I guess she's also doing some stuff here in New York. So three different cities simultaneously doing the grind. So really excited to chat with her. Sophie Alkezian's here. Hey, Sophie.
Hey.
I think you made a good friend here. We found that you and Ali have a lot in common.
My favorite episode of all time.
It came out as we were getting ready to record this episode. I mean, we knew that you were both Canadian.
Yes.
And both were in Toronto, but
Yep. Same college, same program in the college, which is like a small program.
Yeah, both.
Crazy.
Both now doing work in comedy, know a lot of the same people in the, you know what I mean, in the comedy world.
It's wild.
A small world.
And I had never heard her name. It was so weird. It was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought she had a lot of really great things to say. I mean, I enjoyed the talking about the differences and the similarities between the scene in Toronto.
Yes.
And how she got started. And she got started with the Young Astronauts, who I don't think she works with anymore, but who are a really, like, that's a huge, they do a lot of big branded work.
Yeah.
So, like, getting in with a place like that as it's blowing up, as you're getting started in your career, too, I'm sure that gave a lot of opportunity right out of the gate in a really exciting way.
Totally. Oh, my God. You know? That's huge. Yeah.
Because she definitely moved to the U.S. with a hell of a resume.
Totally.
Which we'll get into in a little bit. But yeah, very exciting to chat with her and making new friends.
Yeah, making new
friends. Making new friends all the time. So we'll jump into that in just a minute. We want to give you guys some updates on what's happening here at UCB Comedy and what stuff we're working on and stuff going forward, what we're really excited about. We had an announcement from the New York Television Festival a couple weeks back, two shows that we've been working on, got in over there. So we're really excited to premiere those at NYTVF,
woohoo,
our old buddies, in October, including one of the old digital teams. We don't have digital teams right now at UCB, but the old digital team program, one of the shows from a digital team got in, which is great.
So cool.
They turned a bunch of sketches from two seasons worth of stuff that they're doing into a 30-minute pilot, or I guess a 22-minute pilot.
That's amazing.
It's really fun. It's called Splunch, and that's going to be at NYTVF. And then another show that we produced earlier this spring called Dark of the Night, which I guess the best way to describe it is an absurd paranormal talk show.
Cool.
With Alex Myers and Eric Yearwood is also going to be premiering. So we're really excited to bring both of those to the festival. And then also they'll both be coming out on UCB Comedy shortly thereafter.
Love that one is called Splunch.
Yeah. Splunch. It's a really fun.
Of course.
Really fun. That's a really fun sketch series. So excited to sort of have those two things come to life. We're also really excited. We did this demo maybe a month and a half back at the YouTube space. There's a thing called Mind Show. I don't think I told you about this. So.
Yeah, I want to hear about this. So cool.
It's basically the best way to describe it is it's live puppeting, almost like Pixar characters in a VR headset.
Whoa.
So it's a really interesting thing. They've got a bunch of demo stuff online already, but the YouTube space has been like premiering this technology for like YouTube creators. So we went over and we did the demo, and then we're excited to go in and actually like to make a project, which we're going to do in the next couple of weeks with this tech. But it's a really neat thing where it's like you wear the headset and you have the controllers, and they've got all these characters and all these environments, and you basically you embody the character. Make it move by moving around yourself physically.
Are there goals within the
world? It's meant to make content. You literally record your performance. So like you become this like alien character, like,
oh
let's
my
just
God.
Say. And the alien is at a Old West saloon.
Is that what you picked?
I mean, it was something like that. Yeah. There's a bunch of stock characters that they have.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But you embody that character, so you see the world from that character's point of view, and it's a 360 world in VR. you animate them and it records your audio too. And then you can do that with multiple characters. So you can make interactions happen.
Oh my God.
And then you flip back around and become sort of like omniscient and you can move around the space and you physically are walking around them. And then you basically hold up a camera. That's the best way to describe it.
What?
In virtual reality and record the characters.
Crazy.
It's really wild.
So is this how I'm shooting my next character reel? Is what you're telling me?
Uh-huh.
Okay, cool.
I mean, I think it's definitely interesting to see how it progresses. I mean, I think that like we've been really excited about some of the, you know, advancements and playing around with like how do we execute comedy in new media formats.
Yeah.
And going in there, it's just like it's a really inspiring experience to sort of see. I haven't done too much in VR, but like sort of like playing with it, you're like, oh, this is viable and this is fun. And if they can make this something, I'm sure in like 5 more years, it's going to be that much more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting. So we're actually going to go in soon, make something, you know, with that tech, a comedy project that we've been sort of like stewing around here, and excited to sort of see what the process of filmmaking inside of this type of world actually feels like. So excited for that.
Woohoo!
Yeah, so big
Very
things
cool.
happening this fall.
Yeah.
Fun stuff.
We
also want to give you guys one update just to close the book, our Maker Book Club, which I'm hoping that by next week we'll have our announcement on the book for the fall.
Yes.
So we get one more in this fall. Maybe we'll do something around the holidays to, you know what I mean, a book club episode around the holidays to be like, let's close the book on the year and on the book club for the year.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we'll have an announcement about what book by next week or in the next couple of weeks. But our first one, of course, we read The Real Truth by Reed Martin. We all enjoyed the book. We had a little panel discussion, drank some whiskey, reviewed the book, and we actually, Reed reached out. And I had a conversation with him last week, and I just wanted to give folks an update because it's definitely like a funny feedback loop to do a show like that and then to talk to the author about like where they felt you were fair, not fair, you know what I mean, hit where their intentions and their execution like matched and how you
probably,
interpreted it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Probably a lot of wish fulfillment for every author out there who's wanted to speak back.
But it's definitely neat. And he also said to me, like, you're always saying people should email and call and get involved in the show. And I'm like, yeah. And this is him doing that. And I was like, that's fucking great.
True. Yes.
And definitely like one of the main things that we said that I thought this was enlightening in his feedback, and I appreciated his feedback, and he was very appreciative that we had done the book club episode, the good and the bad that we sort of like had to say about the experience of reading the book. He appreciated it all and took the feedback very well. And he gave us some feedback. And one of the things that I thought was most interesting was that we were saying that the book came out in 2009 and the business has moved so quickly since then that some of the things felt like some of the stories and some of what he was referencing felt dated. And the thing that I was that I thought was cool to hear from him was that he was saying that capturing the stories at that moment in time, the legends of Christopher Nolan's first film and the way that Doug Liman made Swingers and the way that Boys Don't Cry was produced, it's like that was a period in time for independent film when it was done in a specific way. And a big part of his goal with the book was to interview those people before those stories got too far in the past to capture them.
Right.
And in that context, I mean, those were cool stories. And that was some of the more, you know what I mean? Some of the most beneficial aspects of the book was hearing that process from, it's like Christopher Nolan is fucking gigantic now.
Yeah, huge. That's really interesting. So it is kind of like a time capsule.
It is.
Of that time.
And was intentional to be that.
Yeah.
And I think that some of the other things that like made it feel dated were probably just added on to make it more attractive to buy in the moment.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But that his real core like storytelling drive was to sort of like say, this is how at this time these films got made, knowing that all of those folks were on a trajectory to be huge.
Yes.
And obviously some of them have had bigger careers than others, right? But like there's probably not that many people bigger than Christopher Nolan right now in Hollywood.
No. Yeah, it's true.
The guy can do whatever he wants.
He's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And and all of his work seems to get more and more ambitious. And so to hear the story of how somebody like that made a film that was less ambitious and had to do it on more of a, with more constraints is interesting.
Yeah.
So Very cool, and thanks to Reed for that feedback. I think that closes the metaphorical book on the literal book.
The book is closed.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll be moving on to a new book for the fall, and we hope that y'all will join in with us, read along, and join our book club episode later on this fall. All right, to today's episode. As we said, Allie Pankew is our guest today. Allie's a writer-director from Toronto, now based in L.A., was here in New York. I think she had some business to attend to, and also her girlfriend is one of the writers for the Chris Gethridge Show. So she's been coming in and seeing that process, going to a show or two. And so we caught her while she was here in town. She is represented by Partisan out in L.A. as a director and a writer, recently wrote for Schitt's Creek, the Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara show that I believe it's on, is it Pop? I believe it is.
I think it's in the U.S. on Pop.
Yeah, and it initially was a Canadian show.
It's a CBC show, yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's not anymore.
I think it is. I think it's both. And yeah. we talked to her about the way that Canadian media has a challenge in that it's competing directly against American media
totally.
In the marketplace. And so it is interesting that show started in Canada and has come to the U.S. because that's a rare occurrence.
Yeah, it's an achievement. Yeah.
She also very recently directed the really funny CBC digital series Terrific Women with a couple of Toronto-based comedians. So she also had directed that and did that job in Canada. So she's actively working in two different cities a lot, doing some stuff here in New York too, obviously. So what is the process of getting started in Canada, moving to the U.S.? What's the difference between those two scenes, both in comedy and in filmmaking? What is it like to work as an immigrant in a new country and sort of get started over again in a new country? And what is her approach to writing and directing across all the different projects of, you know, crazy wide variety of scale from television to short form to branded content and beyond, as she is currently, as we talk about a little bit in this, developing longer form projects right now to push forward on that as well, and has been doing a bunch of short film work that she's gotten funded. So really excited to chat with her, really thankful that she took the time to sit down and talk to us. And as always, we had a Bronx beer while we had the chat. Bronx, of course, the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. We drank that Slow Your Roll Session IPA, one of my favorites out of the Bronx catalog. We're actually going up to visit the Bronx and hopefully taste some of that.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to taste some of that fall beer. And as always, check out the Bronx beer whenever you're at the UCB. It's at both Chelsea and in the East Village now. It's on draft at the East Village. And you can find Bronx wherever good beer is sold. If it's got Bronx, you know that this is a good place to be. I should hang out here. And as I said before, go to thebronxbrewery.com for more information on all of their craft beers. All right, let's jump into it. Our conversation with writer-director Allie Pankew. Well, Allie, thanks for sitting down and taking the time.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So right now, it feels like so you said that you're based in L.A., you're going back to Toronto a lot for work. You're also here. You're like a woman of the world.
I am a woman of the world. I'm very worldly. As a Canadian, you know, Canada is a rich tapestry of different cultures.
Yeah.
And so I'm taking that to heart and running with it. But yeah, no, I'm from Canada. I'm originally from the Canadian prairies. I escaped from my small town there when I was about 18 and moved to Toronto for school, for university, and then, you know, formative career years were there. But
yeah.
As with anything in Canada, there's a lot of benefits to coming up in that industry and that place. But if you want to explore certain opportunities, you know, you find yourself kind of reaching down into the States and sending out feelers and stuff like that.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's interesting. So is that push, because I know that, like, there's definitely a story that's common in the U.S. that is, like, you're in a small town, but if you want to get serious about the business, yeah, you go to L.A. or you go to New York. And in different industries, you can go other places too, but like those are places where breaking in, there's just more lower-level opportunity to sort of move up. That's the same thing in Canada with Toronto. That's the sort of like path that folks
yeah,
take.
Yeah, totally. I would say that Toronto and Vancouver are kind of the two real production hubs in Canada. It is really hard to get experience in the entertainment industry if you're living anywhere other than Toronto or Vancouver.
Sure.
So I went to Toronto. I actually went to Toronto thinking I wanted to be a journalist. So I went to journalism school for 4 years at Ryerson University. But through there, I learned that I love production and like the medium of TV and video content. So at least that was something positive that came out of my 4 year education.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I feel like you just, as you start to realize more and more what you want to do in a more specific sense, that just takes you to bigger and bigger hubs for what you want to do.
Sure.
So for me, wanting to direct eventually like film and TV, you can do that in Canada, but there's just not as many opportunities to build up your portfolio.
Okay.
And also Canada, I find too, because a lot of things are government funded and a lot of things are, you know, productions and projects are beholden to like taxpayer money through something like the CBC or something like that. There is a bit of risk aversion in Canada that
okay.
you don't see in the States. So I think that's an appealing thing for a lot of Canadians. There's a lot of talent in Canada, but I think in the States, you know, money and resources are kind of thrown behind new voices a
yeah.
little bit more than they are in Canada.
Okay.
Not that I haven't had luck working in Canada and had a nice time working there.
Yeah.
But I just feel like, yeah, to expand your career, you kind of need to bust out.
And are you still working out of Canada? I know you have the CBC series that's just
yes.
coming out.
Yeah. So I still go back to Canada to work quite a bit. It just depends where the projects are.
Yeah.
And the things that I'm like developing for myself seem to be happening a little bit more in the U.S. right now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just recently, I just directed a CBC web series for CBC's digital platforms back in the winter. And it just came out about a couple weeks ago or a month ago. It's called Terrific Women.
Yeah.
And that was a really fun thing to see because the CBC really did take a risk with that digital series. Two very funny women I know in Toronto created it and wrote it. Their names are Sarah Hennessy and Steph Kalliner. And they're two very funny writers and stand-ups out of Toronto. And yeah, they created these characters and they had done a live show for a while. And then they took the pitch to the CBC and the CBC was like, sure, we'll make a ridiculous
yeah.
late night cable access show set in the 1970s. we'll do it. We'll make 10 episodes.
Yeah. That's cool. So, yeah, but so even now you're still sort of like you are working in Canada actively as
mm-hmm.
projects come up.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to like make headway on my own development, I guess, down here.
Yeah.
But always open to doing stuff in Canada when the opportunity arises. Like,
cool.
That's the thing about Canada, too, that I do wish there was more being actually made there, because we especially have such a rich pool of comedic talent in Toronto.
Yeah.
A lot of Canadian greats, or a lot of, like, comedic greats and comedic icons are, you know, actually secretly Canadian. I don't know if you know this. But no, we do have such a great pool of talent there. And I feel like sometimes they're underutilized. We just don't make as much stuff. So you also see that with talent, too, like actors and comedians. They travel down here to be able to just audition for more stuff, you know, as opposed to just like a Tim
sure.
Hortons commercial.
I mean, in some of that seems like it is like Toronto and Vancouver feel like they are production destinations for any
mm-hmm.
sort, even international projects, right? Like a lot of U.S. properties shoot there.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of production opportunities, but you're almost talking about like on a project creation, writing,
yeah.
creative sort of like development side that you have to leave to find that money? Is that what you're describing?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, not always, but
yeah.
I think what sometimes happens there is that, yes, a lot of U.S. productions, a lot of co-pros happen in Canada
yeah.
because, I mean, A, the Canadian dollar is so
yeah.
weak
sure.
right now. So I think it's, you know, it's helpful to U.S. productions especially. But there's also, like, great tax credits that you can get from
mm-hmm.
going and shooting stuff in
mm-hmm.
Ontario specifically. So, yeah, I do think that for – I think a lot of people maybe below the line, like a lot of crew and stuff like that, it's great. It doesn't really change anything because
yeah.
they're working and it's great whether they're working on something that was created in Canada or whether it's something that was created in, you know, the UK or the US.
Sure.
But, yeah, I think for people who want to actually develop things – sometimes, yeah, the money's not there or it's not being put into, like, new voices.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when you're coming up in that environment, so you said you sort of started in journalism, you get there, you sort of discover there's a production itch or a different sort of direction. Mm-hmm. Was there an involvement with the comedy scene that drove that, or was it more of a production? I know you were involved with Young Astronauts, right?
Yeah, that was a collective that I was a part of for a couple of years, and I started doing a lot of music videos and commercials under that umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still a great company that exists in Canada, but I'm no longer with them.
Okay. They're in LA too, right?
Yeah, they are cross border as well. And so that was kind of where I got my start in making, like, branded content.
Mm-hmm.
But I had always been, like, writing my own stuff on the side and, you know, doing that as a side hustle, like short films and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I guess just my journey, like, linking up with comedy. I mean, I've always been a fan of the genre from my sister, you know, getting me into, like, Christopher Guest movies when I was in my teens. And then I actually just weirdly, one of my first roommates in Toronto was a really great improviser in Toronto named Matt Folliott. And so just ended up going to a ton of comedy shows with my roommate early on. And then just by default, a lot of my friends and collaborators were comedians in the city. And when I started, you know, writing my own short films and casting them, and even some of the music videos that I've done that I've conceptualized, I always try and find a way to use comedians and comedic actors and actresses in it. I just think my favorite thing to do is watch comedic actors and actresses in kind of more dramatic or dramedy roles or heavier roles, because I just think there's something really magical about that.
Yeah.
You know, from, like, the biggest examples of that, like Robin Williams down to, you know, some of the people I've worked with in TO. There's just, like, I've always just been drawn to the, like, vulnerability, I guess, side of comedy.
Yeah.
And what that can bring to a performance, so.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that it also feels like, especially when you're starting out, that there's this need, like, comedians have a need to sort of be working constantly. And I guess that's all actors. But maybe there's something about the way that the internet has grown, and comedy's been such a great communication tool on the internet that has just been, like, a nice, like, marriage between, like, makers who are looking to hustle as they're getting started, and, like, comics who are looking to sort of, like, have platforms to be seen and sort of work their material in too. And when you put those two things together, you get some low budget stuff that, like, can be really great.
Well, I think what's so great about the world of comedy is that it's just inherently going to be something that people want to share, right? If something makes you laugh, what do you want to do with it? You want to show it to someone else.
Sure.
You want to get that same reaction from someone else. So I think, like, even brands and artists, like, speaking specifically about musical artists, have kind of realize that they can capitalize on that. Like, okay, if we make a funny music video or, like, a weird music video, it might be shared more than just, like, the traditional performance-based one that we've seen a million times.
Yeah.
And same thing with commercials. I think there was, like, a period in time where, you know, people realized, like, okay, people are wise to the fact that we're just selling them shit. So let's at least try to tell a funny story. Let's try and make people laugh. Let's be a bit self-deprecating about our brand.
Sure.
And that kind of attitude towards creating stuff, I think, also created a space in, the world of branded content to allow comedians to, like, try out stuff, creators to try out stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's been really interesting. Yeah.
And so in terms of, like, your development, do you frame yourself now writer, director, director, writer? Which one's first?
I guess for me, I'd have to say writer comes first, just because it's what I was interested in first.
Okay.
And I found the medium of scripts and, you know, TV and film through wanting to do other kinds of writing first. So, I wanted to be an author when I was little, and I was in creative writing in university. And then I was like, oh, I guess I can make this marketable by being a journalist, but realized I hated journalistic writing because it wasn't very creative and I couldn't actually really tell stories. I could just regurgitate them.
Yeah.
So for me, it was always about being a storyteller, and that's where my drive comes from. And then when I found, like, oh, I can turn this into a script. I can turn this story into a script. And then finding the visual medium through like school and, you know, starting to work in production. Yeah, I think definitely for me, writer, storyteller first and then director second.
And in terms of like career path as well, in your work as you go from sort of like side hustle to the idea that this is your job.
Yeah.
This is like a career that you're tracking along with. Is it, has it been writing work that has propelled you, you know, into the business first and then directing became an opportunity that opened up, or did it go the other way?
It kind of happened simultaneously. Yeah, I would say like, so I, you know, I was working at this collective in Toronto. I was directing music videos and commercials, and I still do that kind of work now too.
And let's just say too, they do big projects.
Yeah,
there's a lot of like their roster of work, the stuff that you've done through them.
Yeah.
is big
Absolutely.
Scale shit, right?
Yeah, it's like huge corporate clients sure. So there was that happening, stretching my directing muscles on projects through that. And then at the same time, I was like writing my first short film in like 2013 and directed that. And now since I've done three and they started to do, you know, festivals and stuff like that. And I started to get some interest through that and then my management through that for writing.
Okay.
And then also a couple years ago, I wrote on seasons 2 and 3 of Schitt's Creek, which is the CBC and Pop TV sitcom.
It's great. And so funny.
Yeah, when you have Eugene and Catherine O'Hara, you know, together again, it's always going to be magical in some way. And so, you know, wrote on that show. And now also Dan Levy and I, the other creator of Schitt's Creek with his father, Eugene, him and I are writing our own scripted comedy original right now that we're developing and trying to go out and shop around in the fall. Yeah. So it's kind of been like a parallel growth, like as one thing's it's just I think they talk to each other and they help push each other because your experience in a writer's room then, you know, can affect your experience on set directing something because you just I think when you have different experience in different departments of production or different realms of production, they can only help with the other things that you do. You know, like how it's great to know how to edit because then you bring that strength and that skill to set as a director, you know, and you're a little bit more well-versed in what kind of coverage you need, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I think that, I don't think one would have worked without the other.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so you said that you moved to L.A. 2 years ago?
Yeah, about 2 years ago. I got an O-1 work visa, which is, you know, what you want to get as a Canadian.
Okay. Okay.
And started to come down, like, more for projects, per project.
Okay.
And then it was only about a year and a half ago that I, like, fully, you know, got a place in L.A.
So there was some toe dipping.
Totally.
Into that world and sort of like getting set up there that happened prior.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
It was more like jumping in 2015.
That
or so.
I'm very still impressed by when people are like, and I just moved to a different country without any plan or experience in that country. And I'm like, well, I did it in a very type A way, I think.
Yeah,
taking a risk.
Well,
yeah.
What was that like for you then? What was that decision and that process of making that move? Having learned from having done it once, you moved to Toronto, you got yourself set up, you got a community around you, you got some projects going, you start again.
Yeah, I think it's just like what I realized when I moved to Toronto was just like you just don't realize how much your safety net holds you back. And so, you know, when I thought I was ready for another change, I tried to just take that attitude and apply it to LA. And I think for me, too, what it became was that, you know, you would meet so many great people and be around people that inspired you in LA and you'd be rubbing shoulders with and vibrating kind of off of people who wanted to accomplish the same things as you. And you'd be surrounded by these people and you'd have meetings with these people or, you know, just know them socially. Mm. And then it would be like, oh, but I have to like, you know, hop back to Toronto for 2 months. And it just felt like I just remember at a certain point being like, if I'm down here, I think I can keep this momentum going. Like, I think I can roll, I can like snowball this and move a bit faster or a bit more efficiently towards my end goals. So it wasn't like, it wasn't that I don't think I, and I'm, and I still want to grow and work in the Canadian market as well. And there's like different kinds of great opportunities there.
Sure.
But I think I just was like, I think to make certain moves and to be where I like to be around the people that I should be around. It just felt right that I should kind of be spend more time in LA.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, the thing that I've heard said before is that if you want to make cars, you have to be in Detroit, right?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's like a saying that mm-hmm. I think applies in that way.
And I do want to make cars.
You want to make some fucking cars.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, and I definitely struggle with that, like in New York, where it feels like there is a similar feeling where it's like there isn't this volume happening that there is in L.A.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, what is the... You know, what does that timing look like to do that, or is it actually necessary? And personally, for me at this point, like having a family here makes it that much more of like a weighted decision to be like, can I afford to go and take this step?
Absolutely.
And what does it look like if you do it?
Yeah.
And also, is it necessary? And,
I mean,
you know?
Yeah, I only had a cat, so I was like, get in this van,
get out there,
you know. I think it's like you can make anything happen anywhere, truly. And, you know, and you also hear success stories of people making their first feature in Atlanta or wherever or, you know, achieving a success in whatever their field is in other places. And I don't know if, like, you ever – and I also, too, don't get me wrong, when I, like, made the leap, I still had doubts. I still have doubts. I'm like, maybe I should go back to Toronto. You know, like, it's like you never just – that's the thing about moving to a new zone and not being in your comfort zone anymore is, like, you probably will question it a bunch of times.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I do hear that a lot, though, from people now that I'm meeting in New York is, like, they're like, well, I feel like there's more opportunity in, like, some of the comedians I've met here. They're like, oh, I feel like there's more opportunity, more auditions, whatever, in L.A. And, yeah, that might be true. I don't know. I think it's just, like, you just have to kind of figure out what vibe you want to be in.
Sure.
Like what vibe you want to be surrounded with all the time. And that's kind of the only thing to go on.
I definitely agree there is that perception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that for certain types of people, it's the reality.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, I think that there, I mean, look, it is a funny thing where it's like the fact that production has gotten more spread out in the last 10 or 15 years, right, means that there is more opportunity in more places. And the internet changes some aspects of what you can do from anywhere, too. But, yeah, there is an idea that, like, if you are in that place, maybe it's just about it, like, feeling like it's moving faster or having more exposure to a wider set of opportunities that you can hopefully find some that start to work for you.
And I think, too, it's, like, something about – there's, like, an aspirational energy just about being in LA, and I don't not feel it in New York. Yeah, for sure. Like, and it almost, and this is like kind of a double-edged sword because it sometimes can be really exhausting, I feel like, in LA, where it's like just at any point you're like, okay, I could be networking tonight. I don't want to be or necessarily mean to be, but it's just you do meet people who are everyone there is in the entertainment industry. It's very rare that I meet people who are not doing something directly related to or like peripheral to the entertainment industry in LA. So there's kind of this thing of like, well, I could meet someone at this band, this music show, you know, who like whatever, and then you get talking and it turns out you do similar things or you could potentially work together down the line. And so there is this kind of element of like everyone sort of on or like ready to meet someone that could potentially be a colleague at any moment in time.
Sure.
So that's kind of it's interesting because it like lights a fire under your butt, and I think it makes you have to be like ready to just accept opportunities as they come.
Mm-hmm.
But it also can be like, wow, like I, you know, it would be nice to just
just be able to just hang out.
Yeah, exactly.
Or just be able to like talk to people and not have it be about moving.
Oh, you work on Game of Thrones. Okay, cool.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. That does sound like it's got to be different, and that's definitely a different feeling than like you're saying New York, but also Toronto,
totally
too, right?
Yeah.
Is there any other aspect of like what you built in Toronto that's informed like making that choice for you or like allowed you to be successful in Toronto? Did you go with management at that point?
I'm managed by a company called Partisan.
Uh-huh.
And so they're representing me, like they're managing me as a writer and narrative director. And I think, I mean, Yeah, like the, I don't know if I would have made the leap if I didn't have any support, for sure. Yeah. I think that would be really stressful. And I think a lot of people could do that, but I'm
sure
I'm not a cool, calm and collected kind of person.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Also seems like you have a lot of irons in the fire, too, which is helpful. Like you said, you've been doing this short film work, and you did some work with Bravo, right? A couple of things with Bravo?
Yeah, so I had two short films funded by Bravo in Canada. Right. And so that's the thing about Canada, too, is like I do talk about there being kind of like a vacuum of opportunity at a certain level there. But like Canada has such a great focus on funding the arts that I've had projects just funded by government programs.
That sounds amazing.
It is great. It is great. But now let me tell you something. So there's two sides to everything, right? Because there, it's like you can do that and you can make these amazing proofs of concept and you can like show your stuff as a director, a writer, an artist. And there's all of these funds that allow you to do that. But then it's kind of like after that point, it's really hard to take the next step, like in the sense that we don't have like a movie studio system in Canada. So, you know, here it's like 20th Century Fox is like, we bought this script and we are going to handle everything about making this feature from like developing it to casting it to actually shooting it to marketing it to just distributing it, you know. Distributing it? Oh my gosh.
Distributing
it. Distributing it.
No, I'm cool with that
pronunciation. Sorry, I like am just like starting to get used to hearing my own voice in the headphones and it's just like horrifying. And I anyway. But so sorry, I was anyway, to distribution. Yeah. And so in Canada that same system doesn't exist. So right now I'm actually developing my first feature in Canada. And I'm working with an amazing producer up there who does have a really good handle on the like grant program process.
Yeah.
But in Canada you kind of have to cobble together so many different streams of funding to make anything that that's like a lot of the work of actually making something. So a lot of the time, like the development process will be much longer and much more complicated. And there's a lot, there are more kind of people involved that have a say in your project. So yes, it exists and the support is there. But once you make your film, there's also not the same like support for marketing and distribution.
Right.
So I heard some kind of depressing stat that was like, because in Canada we're technically a foreign market, but we're competing against American content, right? So it's like when my parents turn on the TV, they can watch a Canadian show, but they could also just as easily, because everything's in English, watch The Big Bang Theory,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that's playing at the same time and it's got people they recognize in it and it's marketed, it's on all the billboards, etc. So
right.
It's something that they're aware of. So what becomes the challenge is like you can make amazing content in Canada, but there's not a lot of like money to market it or get it out there.
Sure.
So like, you know, the budget just to put a huge new American blockbuster on billboards in Canada, just their billboard budget is like more than the entire budget of like development through to actually shooting a film and marketing it in Canada, you know? So that's a lot to compete against to actually get people to watch your Canadian film.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that exists here too, if you were going to sort of apply it towards like a more DIY or like independently financed process. It almost sounds like that's a great incubation phase for a creative though.
Absolutely. And it's again how I've stretched my skills as a writer director making these short films and how I will also most likely make my first feature.
Yeah.
I'm still obviously looking for opportunities to like also find American funding for those kinds of projects because that it just, you know, that means more money.
Uh-huh. Right, and that
more
market
in a money game.
And that Canadian market is always there for those projects too.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
You could be the Big Bang Theory.
Oh my god!
Billboards everywhere.
I don't know.
Right?
Yeah? I don't know whether to be horrified by that or so flattered. But so it's interesting. Like, it's all just about kind of like trying out a million different things.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not disparaging towards Canada. I think it's a great place to come up. And I think it's a great place to try and make things because there's so much talent to use there. Like the number of people I want to cast in shit that still lives in Toronto is crazy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're even saying that there's this like talent base that is somewhat undiscovered or untapped.
Yeah, just because there's not as much, you know, in the States they're making 1,000 TV shows now, it seems, every month for all these different platforms. And in Canada it's like, we're making content but just not at the same rate. So people just, there's just not as much opportunity to go out and audition for stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's, I just, there's so many amazing comedians in Toronto that I would love to work with in, you know, whatever capacity I could. And I do whenever I get the chance to, too, when I cast my stuff there that I'm shooting there, like the Bravo films I did and a couple music video projects. And I got to work with a lot of them on Terrific Women. That's like a chock full series of, of some great Toronto faces. But yeah, like, I don't know. It's I think you always feel a little bit bittersweet about wherever you came from, you know?
Sure. Yeah, and it seems like it's nice to sort of have the flexibility, like, to go back and forth, too,
mm-hmm.
right? And some of that is based on, you know, like, the you said, you sort of, like, said it, I don't, mm-hmm. you said an O, what is it, O-1
So I have an O-1 visa, which is, like, a special skill in the entertainment industry.
So that's, like, a nice visa to have.
It's a nice visa,
so it gives you that flexibility to sort of do work in either
place. Well, yeah, and also I pay my taxes in both places, and I'm a resident technically in both places. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of people who try and just do one or the other, but I do that so that I can work in both places, you know, and go back and forth and take advantage of the opportunities in either or.
Right. If you started to, you could abuse it probably, but then there's going to be some repercussions if and when things go well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
But
a tricky thing to navigate still though, right?
Like, just am like, get my accountant. I'm like, you just figure it out and tell me what I can do. I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, you know, about like, having a place in both places and having some footing in both places and having a bit of a base. And I feel really lucky that I get to do that. And I don't think I've had the same – I've had just such a weird path, I think, because I've gone from, like, A to K to B to Y, you know, like, all over the map. Like, I didn't do the linear path of, like, you know, you graduate high school and then you go to film school and then after film school you maybe do a resident. You know, like, I didn't do it that way. I've kind of just, like, cobbled together my experience by doing a bunch of different weird things. And so, yeah, I'm, like, very happy at the place where I'm at. But obviously, like, want to move towards more narrative directing that's not, you know, just shorter content.
And it sounds like that's where your development right now is, too, right? You've talked about developing TV properties, developing feature films. It's like you're saying, I've done this stuff. I've got this resume. I've incubated all these skill sets, stretched myself out, and now...
Yeah, and now I'm just kind of like, you know, not waiting, because you can't ever just wait, because that's insane in this industry. But, like, I am just kind of like, okay, I know that is the next step, but I also know how long these things can take. So even though it's like, yes, I have, like, the first little piece of development funding that's come in for my Canadian feature, it's like, it still might take another year and, like, 8 different other organizations and grants and whatever coming on board before I ever get to shoot a second of it, you know? So it is also about in this industry being patient, which can be so maddening, obviously, you know, but it's I'm sure this happens, you know, you're also familiar with this, that thing of like, oh, for sure a project's going, it seems like everyone has said this thing is happening, and then in the 11th hour something goes wrong and it never happens, you know, like that happens all the time. And you hear of, you know, the guys who made Stranger Things, it took them 11 years to actually get that show funded and made, you know?
Yeah.
And so you just have to, like, keep those stories in mind and go, like, it's okay. You know, if I'm trying to tell the right stories and I'm really, you know, if I'm, like, really trying to, like, move forward with projects that I care about, it'll happen in some capacity at some point, but...
Yeah, and you'll feel better about the whole process, even if it does become frustrating at any point.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely have found that I'm more... The longer I go in this business, the more eager I am to talk about things that aren't... that haven't already happened. I'm like, I don't want to talk about the future.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's so uncertain.
Oh, my God. My girlfriend always, she's a crazy comedian as well. She is always like, I'm like, oh, I might get this job. She's like, don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Don't talk about it until it happens, because she's very superstitious.
That's how how I feel.
And it is true, because stuff that you're like, I'm certain this is my big break. This is for sure happening.
Yeah.
It's like a month later, you're like, oh, no one has emailed me back about it now. You know,
yeah.
Like that happens all the time.
And that may not even mean that it's dead. Yeah. It just means that, like,
you might get a call in 5 years and it's like, let's go. Where
yeah,
have you
tomorrow.
Been?
Yeah. Where are you? Yeah. Yeah. Where are you? Let's go.
So that's just been like, you know,
yeah,
the crazy ride. And certain paths that you start out on, like, they don't end up being the path for you. And you have to just be able to pivot and take what you've done and, you know, move along in a new direction with it. And
yeah. I also wanted to chat about, like, specifically being like a female writer director in this business and in Canada too. Like, is there, like, what's the difference in terms of, or in the similarities between the US and Canada in that way of like having a presence for female voices as writers and directors?
I mean, difference between Canada and U.S. for that. I mean, it's just like the numbers are just dismal everywhere for that, to be perfectly honest. Like when you look at they studied the last 300 blockbusters that have been in theaters and only 16 of them or something were directed by women. It's like the numbers are really, really embarrassing. And so I think just the fact that we're starting to actually just see a conversation around this and have it be in the, you know, cultural conversation is great. I think I did notice it a little bit sooner in Canada, again, because a lot of places are beholden to government funding. So there was like there were initiatives starting to be set up a few years back. Like there's this program called the Women in View program, and they like provide shadowing opportunities for TV directors. And I heard about that a while ago in Canada and then like started to see similar things happening in the States. But it might just be because it was like a government mandated thing in Canada. And we love equality in Canada.
Canada, we love equality.
Yeah. But I just am starting to kind of see it everywhere now. It's just kind of like a blanket conversation that's happening. I mean, I've never, other than like just not getting jobs, I've never experienced anything different about being a female writer or director in the environments that I've been in. It's just about probably all the times I just haven't gotten a gig because I just wasn't considered.
I mean, yeah. I guess, and also, like, Sophie, you're on here, too, and you're also a Canadian.
I'm also Canadian.
I guess I just wonder, like, is there the same dialogue happening in Canada, and did it happen sooner?
One thing, I mean, the biggest difference is that in Canada, they really, I think, Allie's totally right. It's
thank you.
Yeah, 100% right. I mean, yeah, because it's a lot of it's government funding, and the government has such an emphasis on diversity.
Yeah.
In like every single sector, like really diversity is like at the forefront of everything that anyone does with government money. So I think that's always been top of mind.
Yeah.
Are you asking me if I've like experienced a difference as a female comedian?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the comedy scene in Toronto, I always felt like was a total boys club.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of actually my like impetus for coming here, is I never really found my place in it. But that being said, I didn't give it the longest shot. It was only like a year in. And I was like, I'm moving. But
I mean, I think like,
I don't know. It could have changed. I don't know.
I think comedy in general feels like, and so does production, feels like a bit of a boys club because it traditionally has been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my girlfriend's a female comedian, go figure, as my girlfriend. She, you know, she even remembers only having done it for like, you know, 8 to 10 years, like when she started, it was like there could only be one girl on a bill. We already have a girl on this bill.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's to a similar mentality. Like you'll hear about TV shows and they're like, well, we have this season, we had a female director. And you're like, yeah, but you had 13 episodes, you know, like it's still not equal. And I think it's just a matter of to like, it's this whole concept of whether it's in directing or comedy or medicine or whatever, it's like where you don't see yourself represented, you can't imagine yourself.
Yeah.
And that's just all it boils down to. And I think women, like, and in the same way that it's like maybe some women are deterred from taking the risk to be a director or a comedian because they don't see as many examples of women being successful, I don't think that's fully it. I think it's also that executives and producers look at, well, who have been the successful directors? White dudes. And it's like, well, why though? It's because they've directed the majority of
gotten
things.
The opportunities.
And they've done the majority of stand-up comedy shows and et cetera. You know, so I think it's about those people too, like the financiers of entertainment. They can't believe in what they can't see either. So we just need more people to take risks on other voices generally.
And it also all relates back to what you were saying before about the, you know, the pond only being so big that you get to a certain level and then you kind of just have to go to the States because. Yeah. And so I think actually just having a bigger, richer pool of opportunities would also make women feel more comfortable to take the risks because they probably just see more paths to take it, if that makes sense. Like there's a big, if there's a bigger scene, there's going to be more diversity just automatically. It would just happen.
Can I add one thing?
No, you can't. Okay. You're a white man.
No, no talking.
Well, no, I was going to say is that it feels like it, like the one part of this conversation that like I don't hear a lot of, but I think is also like it applies here. Capitalists are the same way.
Yeah.
Capitalists haven't, like, it's also about, like, the fact that there are mass market things happening that represent a better plurality of voices show them that the financial, that there is less, you know what I mean? Like, they're also saying to themselves, what has worked?
Yeah.
Because all we want is money.
Yeah, exactly.
And the more things that are runaway blockbuster, you know, like big social impact and also like lucrative for them, the more they're going to be like, yeah, we're comfortable with this too.
Well, also, I think that's why, like, as much as like I don't think Wonder Woman was a perfect movie because it's still it's still a comic book movie, which I don't think is like the epitome of film. Not that I don't enjoy them. Like the X-Men movies are some of my favorite movies. But like Wonder Woman was not a perfect film. But it was so amazing and important because it was like, fuck you. We're going to smash all of the summer blockbuster records and show you that people want this. People are ravenous for this.
Yeah.
People fucking loved Girls Trip. It was, you know, like.
Oh, yeah. I also and as much as it's like, oh, they seem to be remaking, you know, The Hangover with, you know, Girls Trip and Rough Night and Fun Mom. There's just like a few where it's like girls having a wild night. Yeah. Like as much as it's like maybe that's a cheap take, it makes me excited because it's like, oh good, these movies are making a lot of money.
Yeah.
But also, how many times have they just made The Hangover with just
white
dudes?
Yeah.
Like, that's literally like that's every comedy movie that's ever been made since the 80s. So it's like,
they're like, what a wild idea. Yeah. What if we got women doing
it?
But they definitely look at it like, is this going to make us money? And the more things that you can point to that go,
yes,
this does, and it also achieves another thing that's good too.
Look at Get Out. Get Out was apparently for like what it cost to make to what it actually made was like one of the most profitable, if not most. I don't want to misquote this, but I think maybe the most profitable film of last year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because it was made for like not a lot of money, and so it's like, yeah, like if you don't want to do it for the right reasons, at least do it because people are hungry for these stories, I think is important. And it's also just like this, we need to reflect what the world is. And the world's not just, you know.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
One way. And so I think it is exciting. Like, I am noticing a difference. I am noticing at least people, whether companies are putting their money where their mouths are or not, at least they're saying, like, yes, we want to give women an opportunity to tell stories. We want to give people of color an opportunity to tell stories. We want to give queer people an opportunity to tell stories. So, like, I think it'll take time to see the actual action kick in, but at least, like, the sentiment is there currently.
Yeah.
And so it's just about trying to kind of, like, take advantage of that. I'm actually I'm listed on a director's database called Free the Bid, which is really amazing. And it's a database that lists, like, there's over, like, almost, like, 500 female directors on there. Because a lot of the time you hear people using the excuse, like, oh, well, we just didn't know enough female directors have pitch on this thing or whatever. So stuff like Free the Bid and the Directors List are great online tools that now people at least have to go, okay, well, look at all these women I could pick from. You know, it's no longer, you no longer have the excuse of, like, well, I just didn't know any.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, stuff like that is great, too, to see.
Rad. Well, really awesome to sort of take the time and chat.
Oh, my gosh. I loved chatting about both countries. It was so fun. Thank you so much for having me. Nice talking to you guys.
And that'll do it for episode number 63 of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thanks to Allie for sitting down and taking the time to chat while she was in town. She definitely didn't have to do it, and it was very nice for her to do it, and lovely to be able to sit down and talk to her about her experience and all of her work. And thanks to you out there for listening. This podcast is for you, the makers, the comedians, the ones who are working in this business, grinding away, and hopefully this is beneficial and inspiring to your process. And if it is informative for you, go ahead and subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes.com/UCB Comedy. We'd really appreciate that, and we'd love to connect with you. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at UCB Digital. And you can also email us podcasts, plural, at UCBcomedy.com. Especially, you know, if you're an author of a book, let us know, because we are looking for a book for our Maker Book Club. Hopefully have an announcement next week, but happy to connect with you. As always, UCB Comedy is all over social media, at UCB Comedy. New videos on Facebook, YouTube, and Vimeo coming out, including Facebook Lives every Wednesday at 2, every single Wednesday at 2. And thanks to the Bronx Brewery, the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, for their support as well. We were drinking that Slow Your Roll IPA. Pick one up the next time that you are at the UCB East, UCB Chelsea, or shit, anywhere that's got good beer. TheBronxBrewery.com for more information on all of their awesome craft beers. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll be back next Tuesday. And until then, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.